My name is Trish. I'm an alcoholic. If you guys can't hear me, like, let me know. Lori always tells me I get soft at spots. But I have my phone here to keep me on my time. And thank you so much for having me here. I want to thank Carrie so much. What a delightful lady. She called and invited me and has just been so helpful with everything getting up here. And Kathy, thank you. What a great event you guys put on. So impressed. And my friend Holly, who I think is the reason I'm here. Holly and I met 22 years ago in Newport Beach. And we were new together and we ran around. And, you know, I was reminding Holly when I was, I don't know, maybe 8 months sober, I was on disability, you know, which I probably belonged on. And I don't know if you guys remember, but like the anthrax scare came through and all of a sudden like they stopped the mail and my disability check was in the mail and I was like living like dollar to dollar. And I was like, oh, well, I'm not gonna be able to go to my AA meetings because I don't have any gas money, you know. And Holly gave me $30 to fill my tank. And when my check came, she would not take that money back. And she said, I want you to stay sober and pay that forward to somebody. And I'm telling you, I put gas in a lot of cars in the last 22 years, and I think of Holly when I do that. And we ran back into each other like 5 years ago. Isn't that like the magic of AA? And it's so crazy. She's like, I live in Ridgecrest. I'm like, oh my God, I'm from Ridgecrest. I was born and raised here. I was like, oh my God, weird we would live in Newport Beach, and she's living in my hometown, and I'm living down there in hers. So it was crazy to hear that, and I'm just glad to be here, and I love her very, very much. And you know that, like, language of the heart that we have in AA, it doesn't matter how many years have gone by, you know, this is a place where we know that we save our lives, and I get to know when I come into AA, it doesn't matter what AA room I'm in, those people have saved their lives there too. And it saved my life, and my son ended up here with alcoholism. And I have to tell you a funny story. Like when I was like, started getting in trouble here and my parents like really discovered what was going on, my mom goes, you have to go to rehab, but we're gonna send you out of town because we don't wanna ruin your reputation here. I knew she meant we didn't wanna ruin her reputation. If you want anybody to know, her daughter might be doing that. So I asked my sponsor, do you think like 20 years, my mom's been gone like 20 years, you think I can go back and say I'm an alcoholic in my hometown? I think, sorry, Doris. But anyways, you know, I'm really grateful to be here. And I know serenity is my topic. And I'm going to, you know, just tell my story. I started drinking here in Ridgecrest at 16. I lived on the base. And, you know, all the good base kids knew when somebody's parents were out of town, and then we would go over there and have a party, you know, until we got onto high school, and then we'd have a party up in the mountains. And, you know, when I moved down to, like, San Diego, I'm like, where's the mountains? Where's the parties? You know, I had, like, a big adjustment up there, you know. And you know, I took a drink at that party on the base. I won't say the person's name. I just saw him at an all-school high school reunion there. But I was an active alcoholic from day one. I took that drink, and I have that chemical effect in me that I was transformed from the first drink. I could not stop drinking once a drink. I'm sure if I accidentally took a drink right now, it would be traumatic, because once I poured alcohol in me, I could not stop. Some other force stopped me. You know, like we ran out, I passed out, I hit a car, I went to jail, like blah, 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 all the places that we go. But I did things like, I remember my husband and I had theater tickets at the Orange County Performing Arts Center. We had them in the evening, and we used to go to dinner and then have a drink, and then I would have to carry like a pint in with me to the theater. Like, I couldn't stop drinking once I had that drink at dinner, and I'm like, I'm gonna change this nonsense. I moved us to matinee tickets so we could go get the performance over and then we could go out and drink for the rest of the evening. You know, I didn't have to worry about like stealing a bottle in there, you know, or waiting for the matinee time. And it just was that way all along. And you know, eventually, we right now, Lori's one of my sponsees. Thank you so much, Lori, and thank you for coming with me. You know, she's heard a lot of the China Lake Ridgecrest stories, and it was fun to drive up here with her. I wanna see here, I wanna see there. We were like driving past. I go, that's where my old boyfriend used to live. What happened with him? I'm like, well, this and this. I go, well, actually, he ended up breaking up with me because I drank too much. Then another one. Well, actually, he ended up breaking up with me because I drank too much. I guess because I had a problem from the beginning, you know. But we started reading that, you know, in the pandemic, we started meeting once a week with the girls I sponsor online. And I don't know, we were doing a lot of talking about ourselves, so I'm like, let's get in the book, let's read through the stories, you know. I didn't realize like 48 stories meant 48 weeks. We have six left, right? But I was reading the story from the gentleman that started AA up in Canada, and he talks about, you know, eventually all he drank for was to erase the memories of the night before, you know, and that's really how my drinking God, it was such a mess. I created such a mess, and I would wake up in the morning, and I'd be like, oh, my God. And then I would start it over again with, you know, using a few other things added to it, and I would have a whole new plan, and I wouldn't have to worry about all the chaos and all the trauma. So any serenity that is in my life that I might get to share with you came from Alcoholics Anonymous. It did not come from the chaotic life that I lived. And I'm just going to tell you my story and what has unfolded over 22 years of sobriety. I just turned 22. My sobriety is May 11th. 2000, I called my mom up here. I was at the hospital that I had been hospitalized in seven times in the psych ward, all seven of those times. I had convinced them that I was bipolar, manic depression. I liked the medication that they gave me there. And by the end, I just kind of saw, you know, the psych ward as like a day spa. That's where I kind of got to go, you know, whenever it got really bad, you know. I arrived a couple times in straight jackets and a couple times just, you know, because my family put me in there. But I called my mom on that morning. It was Mother's Day, and I got to say to her, you know what, Mom, I apologize. I started taking things that make me look like I was having a psychotic break, but really I'm an alcoholic, and I started adding a lot of other things to it, and I'm going to come in here and tell the truth. And she asked me, is that better? And I'm like, I don't even know. I don't know if it's better to be an alcoholic than mentally ill, but it really actually is the truth. And what a release to finally tell the truth. I mean, over and over and over again, I would get desperate. I would back myself into corners. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to stop. You know, I would let my family, you know, like check me into, you know, South Coast Hospital one more time or Charter Hospital, or I would let the police take me or whatever. And then like quickly, I would take my will back. And every time, that desperate plea didn't last, you know. I mean, I always say, well, I only came into AA once. Oh my God, I went into seven mental institutions and I thought that was like normal, you know. Okay, I'll stay sober, you know, give me this pill, you know. And, you know, I kind of liked lighting, I liked the lighter on the wall, you know. I mean, it was just crazy, you know. And so I would take my self-will back. And once I would do that, Lori and I love this line so much in the third step prayer. Once I took my self-will back, I wasn't able to live as God intended me to live. You know, once I was in that self-will, I could not live maybe the kind of life that was intended for me to live. So AA has given me that story. And like I said, I took my first drink here, Boone's Farm. Yay! If I'd known I was going to become an alcoholic, I would have started with something a lot fancier. But, you know, and it went on. I drank myself. I was a swimmer here. I was telling Lori, you can see why everybody had to swim here. It's so funny because I live like in San Clemente. It's like surfer city, you know. And I'm like, I'm not from the California that you guys think of, you know. I mean, I like the beach now too, but I like the desert a lot too. And, the minute I started drinking, you know, all of a sudden I would go to my swim meets and I would swim my butterfly race and I would go in the bathroom and I would puke and then I would come back and swim my butterfly race and then I'd go have a cigarette behind the officers club, then I would go back and do my relay, you know. I mean, it was just crazy, you know, the change that happened. We would go to Burroughs and then we would cut school. I was a pretty good student. I loved to read, which helped me a lot. We'd drive up in the mountains and drink, and I would write everybody's essay for them that we had due that day. I thought I was helping Burroughs High School make sure that we all graduated, you know. I realize now that was kind of cheating, you know, but I mean, just like the huge change. And my grandmother was from here, my mom was from here. They were, you know, active in the community, and, you know, and I was not raised to behave that way. And, you know, my exit from this town, oh my God, I was 18, I turned 18 early, and I went to the enlisted men's club one time, which I really liked because they would let you in there when you were 18, and I was drinking cherry slow gin. I've been having really bad headaches, and the doctor had put me on like Valium or something, so you mix that with cherry slow gin, I was like falling off my chair, you know, and my mailman walked by, and he's like, I'll take her home, I know where she lives, you know, and my parents were up there, they were like entertaining people, you know, on the base, da-da-da-da-da, and the police bring me there, and my dad's talking to the police officer. I go right out the window, back down to the enlisted men's club. They wouldn't let me in, you know, and the guy calls my dad, and he comes. I mean, they have all this company in their house and everything, and the next day they, like, threw me in the car and couldn't wait to take me to San Diego State, you know, and out of this town. down. And, you know, when I went down to San Diego State, which is a great place to go to school when you're an alcoholic, I had no idea that Mexico was there. You know, when you live up here, you're kind of like isolated, you know. I called my mom. I'm like, how come you had me take 6 years of French? Did you know that Mexico was right next to California? I had no idea, but I found Mexico very quickly and you know, joined a sorority down there, and I was the sorority drunk, you know. I would wet the bed and flip the mattresses and, you know, go down there and just do all sorts of crazy things. And I remember it's in my sorority, we used to have this. I was laughing when Gemma was talking about the sorority needed to have some different standards. I don't know if I would have made it in there either. But, you know, but I, like I said, I was pretty book smart. And I remember one year I won the highest GPA. We had this steak and bean night. And, like, I got the highest GPA, and they're all like, Trisha, she's the sorority drunk. You know, like, nobody could believe that would come out of me. And I got married to a fraternity guy down here. We came up here and had a wedding, and I left San Diego State just like I left China Lake. I wasn't a quiet drunk. We all went down to San Felipe, and I got flipped off a balcony there and fractured my skull. And this is the kind of drunk I am. I end up fractured skull up in the San Diego hospitals, and the doctor tells me, we're going to send you out to get a head x-ray to make sure you have a fractured skull. So I'm in a hospital gown, you know, black eyes, the whole nine yards. And one of my sorority sisters comes and gets me, and the doctor comes back. He goes, yeah, your skull's fractured. We're sending you back to the hospital. I talk my sorority sister into going to happy hour. I do not want to go back to that hospital. It's spring break. And so we drank at happy hour till about 10 o'clock at night. And then she brought me back to the hospital, and the doctor was like beside himself. And I'm in that happy hour in my hospital gown, you guys. I was decked to go to happy hour, you know. So, woohoo, you know, I mean, just crazy stuff, you know. And I remember I came up here and got married at the O Club, and my sorority came up, and my husband's fraternity came up. One of my husband's fraternity brothers was arrested for being drunk on the base, and he spent like a week in the jail on the base. Like, he was really drunk, you know. And, you know, and I started my life as a little school teacher, you know. I mean, I had it in me, you know, and my drinking took me to inexplicable places. I mean, I would teach school, and during the day, like, I, you know, my mom would send me her last year's Liz Claiborne clothes, and I would dress all up and look really nice, and then, you know, I would be drinking at night, drinking on the weekends. I got picked up, put in jail one night after a bowling league. I called a substitute teacher in, you know, from the jail, you know, just like crazy stuff. And it just went on and on and on and on. And, you know, I'll get into kind of what happened. I got married. We had a son. In 1979, my brother passed away. And my parents lived here, and they were going on vacation for the summer, and they had asked me to take my brother into our house down in San Juan, and he died while he was there, and I had to tell my parents over the phone that their son was dead, and they needed to come home, and talk about a reason to drink, you know what I mean? I had a horrible resentment against my parents. They knew my brother was struggling a little bit. I thought they should have canceled their vacation, mortgaged their house, and taken care of him, and then I had this horrible guilt feeling that I had been responsible for him during that time, and he died while he was on my watch. My sister and I went to the morgue and had to identify him while we were waiting for our parents to come home, and it was just, I was early 20s, my son was born, you know, 9 months later, and a joy to our family, but it was really an awful mix for an alcoholic at a young age, and I will never forget the freedom of being able to put that, it makes me cry now, to put that on my doorstep and realize when I was 44 is when I stopped drinking. My brother died when I was 24. But to put that on my doorstep, you know, and really be able to look at that, and alcohol had just poured that down, you know. And I went on. I was actually a really good teacher. I won Teacher of the Year a couple times. I got to go to the White House. I got to meet the President of the United States. I'm like, wow, where do you go from here? Where I went from there that year was I went into my first mental institution by the end of the year. I remember they like dragged me through the mental institution. I'm like, look at what Bill Clinton's doing, and he's not locked up, you know? They're like, you're crazy, you know? And what happened really was my first husband and I had separated, and I'd gotten remarried again. And my husband had a stepson, and he eventually decided to come live with us, and everybody told us to go and change the child support arrangement, and we did not because he was now living with us, so he lived with us during that whole time. And then when all that time was done, my husband's ex-wife came back and sued us for all that back child support. And I was really angry about it. Talk about a justified anger. Furious. You know, I mean, I would be in the grocery store and people go, "Hi, lady, how are you? Oh, my God, my husband's ex-wife is suing us." You know, they'd be like, "I don't even know you." Well, you're going to hear this all the way to the end. You know, I mean, just, I could not let it go. And my husband and I started working second jobs to pay for all the attorney fees. I mean, we had a lot of attorney fees to go back in and pay for. And my son started having trouble in school, and they put him on Ritalin. And I'm like, you know what? I want to lose 10 pounds and have a little extra energy. I'm working a lot of hours. And so my son really never even got to find out if the Ritalin was going to work on him because, I mean, I took it. I liked it. And my husband's son and I watched a special on TV. And this was something I was going to go to my grave, never telling anybody. I mean, God, don't you know I'm a school teacher? I'm the president, you know. And we watched a special on TV about how kids were taking their Ritalin to high school. And they were selling it, and kids were chopping it up and storing it and using it speed. And my son and I were like, oh, my God, who would do that? Mom? Like 5 minutes after watching the special. And I went crazy. I mean, I really, literally, I went to the doctor, and I'm like, this Ritalin is so good for my son. My whole family has ADD. I'm like, walk out with like 5 triplicate prescriptions, you know? I went nuts. I mean, and I really did. My 4 kids, I'd come and teach school. Okay, today we're going to build Taj Mahal, you know? I was quite bouncy. And, you know, and I just, I couldn't hold it together, you know? I like, you stay up for several days on end and try and teach school and add alcohol and whatever to it. And our house turned into utter chaos. You know, I was telling Lori on the way up here, I remember telling, I'm like high as a kite, and I'm telling them, they're like, you need to knock it off. And I'm like, I am the glue in this family, and I quit. Let's just see what happens to you. And I said, well, we did all fall apart. Well, I called the police one day. My husband and I were in this huge argument. I mean, I had come home and like moved all the furniture, you know, and all the stuff that we do, and we're on that crazy stuff, you know, and we got in this huge fight, and I would be like, I'm a little school teacher. I'm going to call the police because we're having an argument, you know. And so I called the police, and I'm covered in bruises. I've been moving furniture, like, for days on end, you know, and I'm telling the police, because he hit me, you know. And my husband said, somebody ought to hit her. And that wasn't the right thing. They took him to jail, you know, and they went upstairs, and my kids were, by that point, you know, selling things that you're not supposed to sell, and my stepson went to juvenile hall for 30 days, and they never walked back in our house again. My husband did not want to come back. He was a teacher, too. He got put on administrative leave, and I was on a leave, and my stepson was not happy about going to juvenile hall, and there I was, all alone in my house with my chaos and my alcoholism, and you have it. And I went right down to Cook's Corner and had a drink and invited the bar home, and they stayed for like 4 years. I mean, they moved right in. Hey, a place to stay, a lady on drugs, and she's got a disability check. We're in, you know. And it was, I went from being like in a neighborhood where, you know, I was like the PTA mom and team manager, and my two husbands actually together coached the Little League team, and I became what my sponsor later said to me, the white trash of the neighborhood, you know. The police were coming out all the time, and it was just insane. And that went on, and actually what happened, my dad got very, very, very sick, and we were told that he had about 2 years left to live. And he would drive down to my house. I remember they did an intervention on me in Ridgecrest. They had a lady come out. She talked to my family. She told them to leave me alone. I'll never forget going to get my 1-year chip at the Alano Club, and I sat next to this lady, the interventionist, and she goes, oh, I've been praying for you forever. I go, I have the biggest resentment against you. You told my family to leave you alone, and they did that. You know? I mean, I've been praying for you too, you know. But, anyways, you know, and I remember my dad coming down a couple times and trying to get these people out of my house. He would turn the utilities off, and he sat on that porch with these police officers, and he's like, my daughter was not like this. I do not know what has happened, you know, and just cry with them, and they'd get all those people out of my house, and I'd go, okay, I'll go to the psych ward one more time, you know, and I would check myself in and then take my will back and not be honest. Number one, I'm not telling them all the stuff I'm putting inside of me. Is that crazy? I thought it was better to be marked mentally ill than be an alcoholic, because mentally ill people got to keep drinking, I guess. I don't know. You know? But I was not going to, like, let that secret go. And And what happened was I did not get sober from my dad's death. As a matter of fact, I one day my family wouldn't have anything to do with me. My son wouldn't talk to me. I'm like done with all of them. I like took all these medications that we had. I drove up into the hills in Victorville and drove on a fire lane and took all those pills. And I left them a note on the bed, you know, I'm gone. You know, my roommates and that, the people that were living there were like, yay, she's gone. Let's have a garage sale. You know? But the fire crew found me on the fire lanes up there and brought me to Victorville Hospital and chalked me. That was an amends I made to the fire department in Victorville when I got sober. And chalked me, and I was there for about 4 days in a coma, and I came to. And I remember my mother calling me from here, and she said, there's two people dying in this family, Trish. And only one is trying to save their life. And I've begun to think that perhaps death is preferable for you. What a thing, you know, for a mom to have to say, especially a mom who's lost her child. And I was telling Lori, I felt so sorry for myself. Like, why wouldn't my mother come and take care of me? She's already lost a child. She knows what it's like. And to come into AA and have that flipped around, like, how dare I do that to my mother who's already lost a child? To have her go through that again with a child, to actually get to the point where she wished me Godspeed, really. They wanted no more of me. And I stayed in that. My son came to that hospital. He said, Mom, if you want to be dead, I'm done. Good luck. You're on your own. And Thanksgiving came and Christmas. I knew they had given my dad 2 years, so it's been about a year and a half now. And I did not make it home to Ridgecrest to say goodbye to my dad. I called both times. I'm on my way. Had a couple drinks. Couple things to keep me awake, and then I call the next day, I think I have a cold, maybe it'll go away, blah, 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 blah. I mean, they weren't begging me to come, but I could not, knowing that my father was going to pass away, and he was a good man, and I loved him, and I could not pull it together, and the next time I came to Ridgecrest was at his funeral, you know, I came with a keeper, you know, somebody came and brought me, and they said, you can come home, come to the funeral. I came home, my dad kind of woke up for like a day, and I remember we got to go to Kiwanis, and I remember I was just falling apart because I realized, I walk into my mother's house, and I'm like, oh my God, what have I become? What have I become? I've been locked in this house with all these people just, I don't know, whatever, becoming something that was really disgusting, to be honest with you. And every time I would wake up, I couldn't live with that, and I'd go back under. The school district is writing me saying, we're keeping your job for you, please come back. And I went to that funeral for my dad, and stayed for a little bit, and then I got escorted home, and I remember I stopped at the pharmacy on the way out and filled what I had just gotten from the last stay at the hospital, and I went home, and those people were in my house, and it didn't work very much anymore, you know? I stayed in that house for 6 more weeks. I called my husband. I'm like, my dad died. You need to take me back. How can I exist here? And he said, you know what, honey? I love you. He said, but life is not peaceful with you. He said, I might have 10 years, maybe 20 if I stay away from you, left in this world. And he said, no, I don't want to spend it the way that you live. He goes, I begged you to get sober and go home and spend some time with your dad, and you couldn't do that, and I wish you well, but I ask that you stay away from me. Our divorce papers are ready, but if you need the insurance, you can, you know, check yourself in one more time, but I'm done. And I was like, wow. You know, he had gone to anger management when he got arrested from my house, and he was a little angry. It was probably a really good program for him. But, you know, somewhere in there, he found like a spiritual turn. You know, they had him come to AA. He did quit drinking, and he just really, really changed internally, and I couldn't have him. He dragged me a couple times to AA meetings, and I'm like, they're a cult. You know, we owned a little consignment store for a little while in that all that craziness. And I remember my husband would come, and there was an AA club right up on the top. And they would like come out there and smoke cigarettes off the balcony. And my husband and I would get in a fight, and he'd go, I'm leaving. And I would like run out after him. I'd jump on his car, don't leave me. You know, and he'd like bounce me around the parking lot till he could get me off the car, you know. And the AA people would sit up there, they'd be like, you go, girl. We have a seat saved for you. I'm like, who are those people? I mean, just, but that's one of my regular meetings now, that group, you know. But, you know, and about 4 or 5 weeks went by, and I was like, my husband must have a girlfriend. You know, that's why he's willing to be done with me. I mean, how could you leave me? And he had moved to an apartment that I wasn't supposed to know where it was, you know, but I went down and I thought, I'm going to catch them. And I went down and I spent the night in front of his apartment, right out there in the bushes. They were going to wait till they walked out, and there I was going to be like, remember I met Holly, she goes like, I know, you were always in the bushes, which is where I had my spiritual awakening. I mean, I don't know where yours happened, but the gardener got there before my husband did. He's like, ma'am? And I'm like, oh, good morning. How are you today? You know? And I got in my car and I'm like, oh my God, it's me. It's me. I'm the crazy one. You know? I mean, and I drove myself to that hospital and I made that phone call to my mom that day. I came in. I'll never forget, they took a urine sample. And I was like, I told them the truth, but then I'm like, I don't want a urine sample on record that says I'm a drunk, so I added soap to the urine sample. So a bunch of soap when I was in there dating. I'm like, here's a clean sample. You know? I don't know. I think that was like my last real big purposeful lie, you know. But I went to that phone and I called my mom and my journey began. You know, I stayed in that hospital as long as they wanted me to. And I explained to them, you know what? I know I've been in here like 7 times. I mean, I know I've been in the like high care. I mean, I was like had roommates that were having shock treatments. I mean, they had me pretty locked down there a couple of times, especially after the suicide attempt. And they're like, well, we don't know. I don't know. You're pretty much qualified for the psych side, but we're going to let you go over to the, they had a Genesis program over there. And I was laughing when you were talking about Dr. Paul the other day, because when I was in there, Dr. Paul died. And he like went to that hospital, like down the Canyon Club, and they were announcing all over the speaker, Dr. Paul died today. And everybody was like crying. And I'm like, wow, he must have been a really popular doctor, you know, until I read a story in the book later on, you know. But, and I got honest. And, you know, I tell you, there was a girl in that treatment center. She was a math teacher where I taught school. And she was the first person I saw in there. And she said, oh my God, Trish, we wondered what happened to you. You know, you were like this teacher for the year, you met the president, then you took a sick leave and we never saw you again. And she goes, I'm so glad you're here. I don't know why you're here, but I'm a drunk and I'm trying to get sober. Come sit next to me. And I go, I think I am too. And she goes, then let's get you well. You know, and I sat next to her during that program for 30 days and heard her write her story and tell it. And I was like, wow, you know, she's a quiet little math teacher at our school. I had no idea, you know, but she was like really an Eskimo that made me feel like I don't have to be ashamed if I'm a teacher or whatever, you know. And a couple years later, I saw another gal that I taught with that was in AA, and I said, what happened to Jennifer? And she said, you know, at Easter vacation, she had Easter with her kids. She couldn't get sober, and she hung herself, you know. And I mentioned her because I don't think I'd be here today if she hadn't been on that couch when I came in. And I don't know why she's not here with 22 years, but I'm grateful that I am. And I'm grateful that when I walked in that day, she was responsible. She had the hand of AA reached out to me and made me feel comfortable for being there. And just, you know, she had 3 beautiful children. And I just always have to remember that that line in AA, it's not an inconvenient line. We, you know, we don't cross the line and, oh, you know, I forgot to pay the bills. It's a real tragic line most of the time when we cross that line. And so I did everything that hospital told me to. I went to sober living afterwards. I moved in. You know, my little son was the only one that would come and see me in rehab. My parents were like, yada, 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 we've heard this before, you know. I remember my son coming to group and he goes, I just want to make it clear, I'm here to support my mother's sobriety, but pot is not a drug and it's going to be in our house. Like, whatever, you know, Patrick, just, you know. But, you know, and he and I went home, we had to go home and kick those people out of my house. We went and we called the police, the sober house went with me, we called the police, and the cops came out and they're like, oh, I remember you. I remember sitting on this curb with your dad. I sure hope you get sober because he sure wanted it. He goes, you got to give him 30 days. I go, they haven't paid him. They've been there for 4 years. They haven't paid any rent. He goes, well, they have a right to be there. So I had to give him a 30-day notice and move in with them and live with them for 30 days, you know, and go to AA. And I went to AA like round the clock, you know. I went to AA and cried and cried and cried and cried and cried. I thought that, I mean, I just came in and like, you know, I was the drama in the middle of AA. Oh, my God, and then, you know. I remember a lady from New York, she goes, oh, my God, quit crying and start praying, you know, and she handed me this prayer book. And then I got my first sponsor, Julie, and she told me I was going to start going to a Wednesday night meeting with her. And this is why still all these people are living in my house. They're, like, keying my car and stealing my stuff, and I'm going to AA. You know, my son's smoking pot in the middle house. It was crazy. Not really a vision for you, but, and, you know. And I tell Julie, well, I don't know. That meeting's all the way up in LA, you know? I mean, I have a family. And she goes, not one of them is speaking to you, so you need to get in the car. And so she started taking me up to the Pacific Group with her and Carol Mulvey and Sharon B., a bunch of ladies who had a bunch of time, like 25 years, about where I am right now. And a little newcomer and I, Chris W., Holly was around then, that's when we knew Holly, and Chris and I would get in that car. Oh my God, I can't believe we have to get in this car and drive with these ladies. They're going to tell us about the promises, and you know, and it never occurred to us like how obnoxious we must have been in that car. Like, we had no idea these people with all this time were like, you'll be okay. I mean, Cheryl Bowlby, Karen told me, she goes, yeah, we used to tell you you'd be okay, but really we had a pool going on. We thought you maybe had wet brain. We weren't sure if you would come back or not. I kind of had this little hum going on. And I would like flip my hair in the back seat. It took a long time to get some of that stuff out of my system. And I'll never forget, and that's where I met the lady at the Alano Club. Thanksgiving came and I wanted to come up and spend Thanksgiving with my mom, and Julie told me, have permission to go up. This is what I had to do. I had to drive up with her to Pacific Group. She drove my car, she came home with somebody else, and while she drove, I read my fourth step to her, you know, that I'd done on my mom and my family. And then she said, okay, so then I went to Pacific Group. It got out at like, I don't know, 11 o'clock at night, and then I had to drive down the 14 and come. And she said, you are to go to AA 2 or 3 times a day, and you are to do the dishes and ask your family how you're doing. You are not to profess that you are a new miracle of AA. You are not to propound anything. You are to keep your mouth shut. You are to not make any amends. You're not on that step. Do dishes and keep your mouth shut and go to AA. I'm like, okay. And I did it. Thank God. Because I was like remorseful and teary, but I really hadn't addressed all the things. I would have come and, I'm sorry, you know, and I didn't do any of that. I came and did the dishes and went to AA and met the AA group, met the therapist that was there. There was a little group of, I don't know, my mom's friends that were there, and she's like, and don't tell anybody whose daughter you are. Okay, well, they all knew they knew me, you know, so I'd go around town with her and they'd like wink at me, you know, I'd be like, thank you, you know, and we baked cookies every morning and I took them to the group and I kept my mouth shut, you know. I was not prepared to make an amends during that time. I was not anywhere near there, and I'm so grateful. And that's what Julie always told me. She said, you were so willing. I listened to direction. I didn't necessarily want to do it, but I thought, maybe if I start behaving well, like maybe the good life will come afterwards. You know, maybe if I just do the actions, you know, that I don't feel is all right. I'm like, do you know how many kids are in my family? I'm going to be doing a lot of dishes. She goes, you should, you know. And slowly over time, Julie finally said to me, she goes, I think you need to go back to work. Work? I'm on disability. They put me on permanent disability after I did that suicide attempt. Like, no, you're not coming anywhere near our kids. And she goes, well, you're not disabled anymore. I want you to start, going and applying for jobs in teaching. And I was working a little get well job by that time, and I would, and a little carpool would prep me on the way up. I remember I went to one interview, they go, you didn't take a resume? No, I didn't know I needed to, you know. Thank you. And I went in the rain without an umbrella, so I was like soaking wet, you know, and I would go to those schools and I would sit there. I would come out in the parking lot and cry. I felt like so shameful of everything that had happened when I was on that school campus. And I didn't get a job that year. You know, it came into September and Julie goes, well, we must have tried to get the promises before you were looking for it. So I spent the whole month of that September doing my amends. I remember, and that's when I clearly remember the amends that I did with my brother. I would take a person every day and write them down. And then I would read the 12 and 12 and the big book. And then I would write bullets all day long what I thought I owed him amends for. And then I would go back and write that. It was an all-day affair with that person. And then I would read that letter to her. If it wasn't okay, we crossed it out, changed it and crossed it out and changed it. And then I went and delivered it, you know. And I just, you know, I just slowly but surely, I remember saying, when do I get to tell my mom, you know, that, you know, where she was responsible for my alcoholism? And she goes, never. You are going to apologize to her, and she's lost her husband. Every time you go to Ridgecrest, you are to do the dishes and change the light bulbs and go to AA and be a good daughter. It's none of your business. You know, you are to never bring that up to her. And I'm grateful for that. You know, and I had a big resentment with my sister because she had moved back home and taken care of my dad. What bizarre resentments. You know, it was really because I couldn't be here and do that. My first husband's mom, she was so kind to me. She was an active member. She went to Mass every single day. Every time I came out of the hospital, nobody would take me. She would take me in, even though she's like raising my son at that time. And I wrote on my nightstep, She goes to church, she goes to mass, she brings me in and she takes care of me. She makes me look bad. My sponsor goes, you make you look bad. I mean, just like the bizarre things that I saw, and I got to go and hold her hand and make amends to her and my ex-husbands, you know, and it really, you know, because for a long time, I'm like, I'm not really sure if I want to make amends. I spent a really long time convincing those people while they were the problem, you know, and they might agree with me when I make those amends. She goes, they might, you know, you were the problem, you know, and pretty soon I realized, you know what? If the problem's me, I can change me. I have that power within, you know? I do. I started hearing I remember my meeting said, you cry a lot when you come here. Maybe if you just got quiet and listened to the morning meditation, you might find yourself in there, you know? And so I started coming to meetings instead of vomiting all the nonsense, you know, I really started listening and I started hearing the words of AA, the magic of AA, you know? And I got a job. I got hired to teach, you know, after I went through all those amends, and they gave me a math job. I was an English teacher. I'm like, a math job? They go, yeah, you have 18 months to get a math credential or get started on one. I go, I don't even like math. My dad and I, when I used to live up here, it used to be, I'd say, Dad, I don't know what X is. And he would, like, take the whole table. Well, here's the cereal box, and this is the car, and they're driving together. And when they hit each other, the velocity, I'd be like, oh, my God, just tell me what X is. I do not want to work this problem out. You know, I just, oh, you know. And my sponsor said, well, maybe math was hard because you never tried to do it. Sobriety was hard and you never tried to do it. Like, give it the old AA try. So I took that job, and here, I'll never forget, I was like, I started a master's degree program in math. And so on Thursday mornings, I would get up. I had to teach school during the day. I had my little pantyhose on in my dress because my Thursday night meeting had made me secretary. So here I am, the Thursday night club where I met Holly. So I'm all dressed up to be secretary, and I would go teach all day long, go to Cal State Fullerton, run across campus in my little heels and pantyhose, go to my two classes, and then run over to the Newport Club and be the secretary. And I was telling my woes to this guy there, and then I have to run all the way over here and be secretary. And he goes, wasn't God watching out for you? He made sure you were secretary so that you didn't leave during this time, that you did not leave while the blessings were coming. It makes me cry because I've seen so many people leave as blessings are coming. And I had really, you know, committed myself to AA, so I was going to be there every Thursday night, no matter how tired I was, you know. And I got, my mom watched me walk across the stage and get my master's degree program. She's like, your dad is rolling in his grave, you know. And it was a beautiful thing. And I remember her at the party afterwards saying, I really like AA, Trish. You know, when it comes up on my answering machine, it's you. The other kids, they call and complain about themselves, but you call and ask about me. She goes, I love to hear from you. And my aunt goes, that's so funny because you got an answering machine because of her. And my mom, she passed away. You know, I only got about 3 years with her, you know. And what started happening then was my son, he got into AA. He had a problem. And I remember when he came up for my mom's funeral, we had to kind of do the same thing to him that had been done to me when I came. You know, he was really, really having a really hard time. And I had bought a little house in sobriety. You know, I hadn't filed my taxes in like 8 years. And I'd been in like this, anyways, whatever. I had this money come in kind of unexpectedly. I think that was a big change with my family. And I went and quietly bought a little place for myself in San Clemente. Nobody moved me. I called my mom after I was moved in. Guess what? I found out. She goes, you don't need anybody to move me? I moved in. You know, AA moved me, you know. And I called my husband. I said, I'm ready. Holly and I used to go to this Thursday night meeting, and there was this guy, Don. I think he kind of had a crush on all of us, but I kind of wanted to date him. And my sponsor goes, you can't date him until you sign your divorce papers. And I'm like, well, I really want my husband back, but he won't come back. You know, I'd call him like, I have 3 months. If you don't come home, we're divorced. And he goes, okay, we're divorced. I go, well, you could take some more time to think about it, you know, poor guy, you know. And so at my watch, they do these things down here when you have 1 year, they watch you turn one. So I invited both of them. So there's my little son sitting here between Don and my husband, and we're all sitting on the other side. Which one do you think? And my sponsor's like, I'm going to kill you. But I called my husband and told him that I was ready to release him and he could divorce me. And I thanked him for hanging on for the health insurance all that long. His mom wasn't happy with me. You know, she had loaned us a lot of money to start that business that we took underground. And then I put him in jail. They had to put up a lot of bail to get him out of jail. She was not happy with me. And about a month or two later, he came and asked me to if we could start dating again. And I'm glad it took a couple years, because I was like, I go to meetings on this night. This is the night I come home and take a bath and meditate and spend time to myself, and I'll date you on Saturdays and Tuesdays. And we dated for a year, you know, before we got back together. And our home, although he's not active in AA, our home is a huge AA home, you know. And one of the things I learned, like, I never come home and talk to my husband about anybody in AA. Like, they all know him too, and I don't talk about my husband in AA, maybe to my sponsor. But, you know, their paths cross a lot, you know. And if I'm in that meeting talking about my husband, I'm character assassinating him, because he doesn't get a chance to come in there and tell his side of it. And to be honest with you, there's not much of a side. We're a pretty peaceful home. We're both really grateful to have our lives back. And he moved in with me, and then his son moved in, who had had two children by that time at 19. So we had two little grandkids that moved in, and then my son moved in, who had active alcoholism going on. And God gave me the opportunity for like 6 years to live in that house with my family. And eventually my son got sober. I was listening to some of the people that got sober young, and I remember my sponsor saying to me, parents don't usually follow their children into AA, but children often follow their parents in. And if you just live an AA home, don't harass your son. Just let him know that you changed because you came to AA. He may find his way here. And he did, you know. And we spent 10 years sober together. We used to speak together. He's just such a funny guy. And what happened about 5 years ago is my son got met a gal and got married. They were engaged, and they had a little girl. And all of a sudden, my son started having these horrible tremors. You know, we didn't know what they were. I mean, we were even like, you know, and he started like hallucinating, and he wasn't making sense. So we're even like, maybe you need to work the steps again. Maybe you need a different, you know, I mean, some of the stuff that you think is right when you're in it, not from the tremors, but when he just kind of seemed off kilter. And it turns out he had a disease called Wilson's disease. You know, it's a disease where the proteins in your liver that are supposed to pump the copper out, you know how we eat, everything we eat from the ground has like minerals in it, copper and iron and, you know, metals in it. And his weren't, in Wilson's disease, those don't work properly. So the copper had built up in his liver. And when we were taking him in and getting him tested for ADD and all that kind of stuff, that was really actually what was going on. He'd been being poisoned from birth. And then the liver can't take it any longer. I kept telling him, quit telling the doctor that you're a sober alcoholic. That is not what's causing your cirrhosis. You have been sober for 10 years, you know. And so he went into cirrhosis, and his liver burst, and he went into heavy metal poisoning. And we thought we got it under control. You know, we got him up to UCLA, and we had about 9 months, and he ended up having a stroke from copper that had settled in his brain, and we lost him, you know. And it's been, you know, I really had to get into that. I don't know. It was hard. You know how AA is. I'm not going to talk a lot about losing a child, because if you've lost a child or you've lost any member, it's not a grief group. And I had to go find a grief group. I had to really realize that. And when I walked into that grief group, I could identify with the parents there, the sadness, the things that you can't say. I mean, I learned about identification from AA. And when I would come to AA and you know how AA is. I mean, Patrick was in AA. I mean, that hospital was full of AA from wall to wall. You know, Patrick had designated himself as an organ donor, so we were in that hospital for a long time while they matched his organs, you know, all over the world. And AA walked me down the hallway as we took him to the operating room, you know, and then they said, all the helicopters you're going to see today, that's your son's parts going to save people. You know, and it was tough stuff, really tough stuff, you know. And I'll tell you, we miss him so much. When we were sober, I remember Patrick and I would get in an argument. You call your sponsor. No, you call your sponsor. Then we'd go into other rooms, blah, 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 blah. And then we'd come out. I'm sorry. No, I'm more sorry. No, it was me, you know. and AA made him grow up. Like AA made me grow up, you know. And I was grateful. I was grateful AA was still here when he got there. My first sponsor, one day I got a package at my house, and it was all the CDs from when my son and I had spoken together. What kind of love do you get in AA? And I remember my family, and I've had the beautiful privilege of AA and my regular family mixing, because my son was in the hospital for so long, my family all flew out, and my house was full of my family and AA, my family and AA. And they were like, oh my God, how blessed are you? You know, I mean, And I go, I know I didn't really deserve it, did you? No, you did not. You know, and we just get that rich, rich life here. And that summer, we decided to go across country. And it was my two oldest grandkids. We were going to go see Patrick's daughter turn 2, and he died the next day. And then his ex moved his daughter to Minnesota, so my granddaughter's leaving, you know. And I got in that car. And you know, my two little grandkids, I told you my stepson and my son moved in. They were like 19. We raised those little kids. I mean, they were as traumatized as I was. And I had to really realize in that trip across country and back, I don't own the grief in this. And I have spent my whole life feeling sorry for myself. And wah, 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 wah. And I need to really listen to the principles in AA. I need to listen to that part in there where, you know, not just the acceptance part, but if I complain about my wife, I have a bad marriage. If I complain about my meeting, I have a bad meeting. But if I go in and get in the middle of my meeting and wash ashtrays or whatever, it's a good meeting. And if I find the positive things in the person around me, if I feed the problem grows. If I feed the solution grows. And I have to be careful not to be into expectations. I was laughing last night when Jenna was speaking about all the things that I ever worried about when I first got sober did not include my son dying in there. You know what I mean? I can't get into the future. I don't know what's going to happen. Thank God AA taught me to train my brain to stay in the moment because I was in the moment those last 10 years. I mean, I got 10 years of sobriety with my son, which are like dog years, you know? I mean, we shared the language of the heart together and grew up together. And, you know, my serenity is directly proportional to whether I'm in acceptance or in expectations. So I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to be the grown-up in this family. We're going to learn how to grieve, and we're going to stay together as a family. We started a walk for the organization, and I remember the city of Mission Viejo, they're like, is there going to be any drinking at this walk? I'm like, no, but there's going to be a lot of tattoos and piercings, you know. I mean, we're just, you know, and my daughter and I, now I'm going to try and get you to follow this, but I had to really bring the traditions into my life. My son's ex moved to Minnesota. His little daughter's name is Audrey. There's going to be a lot of characters here. It's going to sound like a soap opera. But Audrey's mom, Kate, my son ended up leaving her a life insurance policy, and she bought a house and put a grandparents' room in it and said, please visit us, you know. And so we would go back and stay in the house, and you know, there was some good and not good feelings there. But slowly, I think it was interesting that Kate lived out with, here with us for a couple years, because slowly I began to really love that little girl again, and she got remarried. We went to that wedding. They have 2 more kids. They're our grandkids now. We started working on that walk together, and Patrick's dad, and because my first husband was Patrick's dad, and then I have a stepdad, and they started working on the walk together. They golf together now, like once a week, you know. My spouses will come up, and I go, isn't that both your husbands in the living room? I'm like, yeah, that is, you know. And one of my spouses, Liz, said to me, she goes, I like both your ex-husbands. I really think it must have been you. Thank you for that, you know. But we have just... That new husband, you know, Audrey's little stepdad, he comes out for the walk, and he'll wear a shirt with Patrick's picture on it and flip pancakes, and he's become a part of our family. Our family loves him. Like, you don't see the lines there anymore, and that's AA. Like, AA, I said to my family, we are going to put that little girl first. Like, in here, we have to come in and put the group before the individual. Like, we want Audrey in our lives. And so for her to be in our life, we have to all get along. We have to be like the grown-ups, and we have to put the resentments aside. And they're not there anymore. And Chad was saying the other day, you know, they all went golfing one day, like both my ex-husbands and then Patrick's ex's new father and son. I'm saying it's hard to follow, but the guy that joined him on the golf course goes, how do you three know each other? And they're like, well, my wife used to be married to him. And my, so, you know, and then finally my husband said, you know what, we all really love a little girl. And, you know, that's what's happened to me in AA. You know, I can't say I've walked through it. I was telling Lori, we cleaned out our garage. The last couple of months, we were going to ADU our garage, and we decided, like, we're at that age where we should, like, throw away anything that we don't want our kids to stumble across. We have 8 grandkids now, and, you know, oh, my God, it was like There was my Burroughs yearbook. There was my first arrest. There was my DUI. Gary goes, why did we even hang on to this shit? I go, I don't know, but it's filed very alphabetically in here. I'm like, I am telling the truth when I tell my story. Look, all this stuff happened. There was my accident, you know. And I could see where my son's, you know, when my son started because he lost his hair. I mean, just all that stuff. But what I started pulling out, too, was, like, the pictures of my youth here and when Patrick was a child. Because most of my pictures, you know, were on a phone, and they were from the last 10 years that we spent in AA. So it was kind of like, why didn't we figure it out then? Like, I keep saying to my husband, how did we not figure out what he had? And he's like, how did we not diagnose him with a disease we never heard of? The doctors couldn't even diagnose it. I'm like, I know, but I was his mom. And if I hadn't been a drunk, I might have figured it out. You were sober for 15 years when he dies. I know, you know. I didn't realize I had gotten really kind of depressed going through all that stuff. And I told Lori it was really nice to come up to Ridgecrest this weekend and be back in the community that I grew up in. You know, I believe China Lake and Ridgecrest is why I took so well to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I had a community here. It was a strong community here. I loved growing up here. I would do something wrong, and damn, my parents would know before I would get home. I'd like, how do you guys do that? You have like antennas that go up and telling all the kids, you know? But I was really loved here, you know? And I didn't find that community as much in Orange County until I got to AA. In AA, they love you like I was loved here when I grew up. And, you know, I've been through the stuff in AA that they talk about I was glad Jenna ran from her phone last night because I'm like, okay, I can do that too. But I was reading the 11th step with one of my girls the other day, and this was in there, you know. Where to go? Of course, I'm not going to be able to find it now. It said, no, that's not the one. Okay. When we stop making demands on God to have it our own way, maybe our affairs might take a reasonable turn. Out of every season of grief or suffering, when the hand of God seems unjust or heavy, new lessons for resources are learned, and courage and strength are uncovered. And it is inescapable that God was with us all along. You know, and I think through the things that I've gone through in AA, the death of my son, to go back to the death of my parents, the good fortunes, the bad fortunes, it's all happened to me. And I haven't taken a drink, you know. And I was laughing when somebody said, I wish I could find that with sugar. I'm the same way. I wake up at 3 in the morning and I think, you know, a bag of peanut M&Ms is a vegetable, you know. But, you know, and that's gotten kind of bad since, you know. And I said to my husband, I don't think it's fair, you know, that I'm having some heart issues and I have to give up sugar. I've given up smoking. I've given up drinking. Now, goddammit, I have to give up sugar. And he goes, I go, where's the fun in that? And he goes, look at the things you're describing as fun. You know, I mean, smoke, things that like destroy your health. He goes, like, could you maybe like, you know, go back to swimming and think that's fun? And maybe, you know. But, you know, I've come here and I've had the inescapable love of AA. I was telling Lori, I think one of the hardest lessons I learned, and maybe this is where serenity started coming in my life, I really didn't pay a lot of attention to like the beginning of the 10th and 11th step where it talks about emotional hangovers, you know? And so a lot of times I might be quick to give you my opinion or crack kind of a maybe not so funny joke. Patrick and I had to go through that when we did our amends back and forth. We finally agreed because we would make our amends and then we would give a story to each other about when they were drunk or I was drunk and think it was funny, but it wasn't really funny. It was like a passive aggressive way that we were trying to bring that back up again. And our last amends, we agreed we're not bringing up our past to each other unless it helps another alcoholic, that's where it belongs, that's what this program is about, that we can take that awful, ugly story that I couldn't get sober when my dad died, and I can talk to another alcoholic who has the same story. You know, you better believe I've gotten a lot of stories since my son died, with people who've lost their children in AA, and I'm responsible for having my hand out there and talking to them and being a part of them. I mean, a couple months after my son died, I have this big meeting on Sunday night. They have voted me commitment coordinator. That is not a really friendly job when you're in a big meeting. I mean, they're cleaning bathrooms and people are complaining. I'm thinking, my son just died. I can't believe I'm cleaning the toilet, you know. And I had these sponsees that would call me and my boyfriend broke up with me and I ate an entire cake last night and maxed out my credit card. And I'm thinking the same thing. Oh my God, my son just died. And you know what? They did exactly what they're supposed to do. Because at that meeting where I was commitment coordinator, I started going at 5 o'clock, and I left at 10 o'clock at night, and I knew the name of every person in that meeting. And for 5 hours, I had a little relief from the grief that was going on. And they knew what they were doing when they gave. I'm like, could I pass a basket? I mean, like something gentle, you know? And the same thing with the sponsees. Pretty soon I'm like, and what did you say next? What flavor cake did you eat all night? You know, do you think you need OA, you know? I mean, but you start talking the language of the heart that's going on there. The funniness of the drama, like the laughter here that seems so inappropriate to people if they're not in AA, you know? But I think that's identification, you know? And I think I went down a rabbit hole there too, but when I was new in AA, I would still kind of blurt out with that anger and that bad behavior, and I would get these like awful feelings, and I started realizing that one of the hardest actions to take into AA is to do nothing, to have an incident that seems dramatic to me, maybe not to everybody else, and to say to myself, I'm going to sit on that for a week. I'm just going to wait and see what happens. You know, I'm and just coming out of my skin because I want to go like give my opinion or do whatever, and come to find out either my perception was completely wrong, thank God I kept my mouth shut, or I didn't feed it any energy and I can't even remember it like 2 days later, you know? And so slowly but surely I just learned to like be a better listener, you know, and not put my opinion down there and go, huh, that was interesting, you know, let me see how that pans out for the next week. And I think then slowly I was able to allow God and serenity to come in and the people of AA to just especially come in and touch my heart. We have a big active group down where we are. Now, any of you are ever down our way, please come. My home group is Legacies on Sunday night, Lori's too, you know, and we're going to leave here today, and we're going to a wedding reception in Huntington Beach on the way home, and then we both have commitments at our Sunday night meeting, so I think, you know, we will not see hide nor hair of our house until we get home, you know, but I like it that way, because, you know, I couldn't even get out of my closet. I laughed at Lori this morning. I go, God, I get bad allergies when I come up here. She goes, I know you had that cocaine sniffle last night. And I'm like, oh, my God, only in AA would somebody say that to you. I've been up here a couple times with my high school reunion friends, and they're like, oh, are your allergies back? I don't know. I just love AA. It's so funny. And, you know, I came up here and ended up being on my high school reunion team, and I didn't want to come back here. There was one high school reunion that I came up here. I was a little awake, and I went to the reunion, and I didn't come back in. I left my purse in there, you know, so my girlfriends took my purse to my mom, and she goes, where's my daughter? And they go, we don't know. So I woke up at the Clarion Inn, you know, by the pool at like 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, ooh, I wonder what happened, you know. And so when I came back here, they're like, well, you work on the reunion? I'm like, they would talk about reunions. I'm like, I'm not even sure I remember that one, you know. So finally, I confessed to the two girls what had gone on. So we were laughing. Like, look, you made it as far as the picture, you know. And I'm sure my mom was really, I just went in my car and passed out, which I'm sure my mom was very grateful for. But, you know, by being able to come back here and be a part of that and be honest up here and come back and live in my community again, like, slowly that shame goes away, you know. I mean, it happened how it happened. You know, I don't know if I'm grateful or not that I'm an alcoholic. I've just let it be. What I do know is that God gave me a purpose here, and he gave me a purpose that I was able to carry even when my son died. My purpose is to be responsible, to put my hand out, to be those. Here these ladies are telling me, we thought you had wet brain. We weren't sure if you would ever get well, but they were putting me in their car and inviting me to their parties and taking me into their potluck and letting me in their home. I mean, who does that, you know? We don't walk by and invite those homeless people into our house, you know? But they come into AA and they get like an instant card, like we're going to love you, you know, right where you're at. And I'm grateful for that. And I hope for the rest of my life. Lori knows. I love AA. I love it. I saved my life here, and I don't know if you guys have ever heard Father Leo talk, but he talks about that. You know, how in his, the difference between where he was a father and in AA was he knew when he sat in a room of AAs that everybody in there had a spiritual experience that had brought him there, which he maybe didn't necessarily always know that in a church. I could never find that in church because I was hungover when I went. My mom would like drag us all to church. I'd be like, oh my God, we need communion today. I get a little like hair of the dog, you know. I mean, I couldn't find it because I didn't have a clear head, you know. So I don't know, I'm probably digressing. I'm trying to kill my hour at this point. But I do, I thank you. Thank you so much. All the promises and everything, and then some have come through. Everything good in my life that's ever happened to me. And I, in good in my life, I count that in walking through hard things and tragic things. I even remember about a year after Patrick died, I was like, oh, I don't want to be here anymore. It's hard to wake up in the morning. Oh, it's going to be a good day. Oh my God, I don't have my son. Oh my God, I've got to go teach those little junior high kids all day long, and who turned out to be very kind. You know, I mean, you just never know. And I thought, all right, Trish, you know, they said in the grief group you would have these feelings. Like, just put that thought away for a year. You know, you can come back to it. Go sit in the middle of your group. Go do all the things that you're supposed to do to help yourself, and see how you feel a year from now. Like, A taught me like that. I don't have to act on anything today. It wasn't even like I had a plan. I just knew it was really hard to wake up for a long time and be a part of the world. And I heard a speaker at a convention who said he got up in the morning and got down on his knees and said, "Dear God, please, whatever I'm supposed to do for you today, please put that in my path." And then he couldn't complain about what came his way. And I started that practice, not every single day, because some days I don't want that put in my path, you know. But for the most part, you know, if I get down and ask that, you know, then I don't mind answering the phone calls or the whatever that comes my way. I asked for that. I'm supposed to be of service. Please put that in my way. And then I can thank God at the end of the day for obligations squarely met and a good day, and my head can rest on the pillow, even if I sound like I'm having cocaine sniffles. You know? But I, you know, I'm just really grateful for every single thing that I've got here. My family's grateful, and it's a beautiful, beautiful life, and I'm amazed by it. When I took 22 years, when I took my chip this year, I'm like, oh my God, I bawled when I had 17 days sober. I remember being at a meeting, and I had 17 days, and I'm like, I have not put anything in my system for 17 days. I didn't think I could go 10 minutes, and then here we are with 22 years. So I thank you so much for letting me return to my hometown and to be here with all of you. It was a wonderful roundup this weekend, and Holly, it's so good to be here with you. And thank you again for welcoming both Lori and I, and Godspeed to all of you. Thank you.